Welcome to another episode of our Pixel Drone Show, the podcast where we talk about with industry professionals about how they use drones in their space. And today, your hosts are Greg Reverdio and myself, Hayek Kestelow. And if you're new to the show, please be sure to subscribe and to like and to share it with family and friends. It helps us tremendously. And we strive to have a new episode for you every Tuesday. For today, our guest is Angad Singh. He's the Director of Business Development at Brink Drones. And Brink Drones is a company that you may or may not have heard of yet, but after this show, you'll know a lot more about them. I've known Angad for a couple of years now. He used to work for Pix4D in business development. And earlier this year, he joined Brink Drones. We'll be talking all about that, but before we get into Brink, the company itself, Angad, can you tell us a little bit? Well, first of all, welcome to the show. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got into drone flying and how that took you to where you are now with Brink?
Yeah, absolutely. Hiya, Greg. Pleasure to be on the show. Yeah, I've known you guys for a long time. I mean, you're in the drone industry. I'm in the drone industry. It's a small world. We're all nice folks. So I think that's, you know, great relationships that get built. I've been in the drone industry, I think, since for a while now, at least 7 years since the beginning of it. You know, I mean, I think a lot of times at conferences, you go around and you ask people, hey, what was your first drone? And, you know, for me, it was I came on Phantom 1 days. So I think that if we look at that way, sure, I wasn't there at the S9000 days. You know, I wasn't there before with the Wukong flight controller, but I was definitely there in the when the Phantom series started. So I've been around for a while. My name is Angad Singh. I'm here at Brink Drones now as the Director of Business Development. Prior to this, I ran public safety for Pix4D, and prior to that, I was a trainer at Pix4D. I got into the drone industry actually through, you know, I think a lot of folks get into the drone industry either from the drone, from the flying aspect of the aviation, or from the data side. And I've definitely come from the data side. I studied GIS remote sensing at McGill University, and during my academic research, I utilized drone imagery to create, you know, machine learning models for predicting landscape analytics. And so the idea was that, hey, we have satellites. They're these amazing pieces of equipment that sometimes get clouds in the way of their image, and that renders the data useless. But if we can put a camera system below the cloud, closer to the object we're looking at, we go from a macro level analysis to a micro level analysis, and we go to a higher what's called temporal resolution, which means I can take data whenever I want to. So now you have these flying cameras that are giving us amazing bits of intelligence and data that allows us to solve problems faster, to learn better about the world around us, and also to innovate and create new industries and change the way that a lot of blue collar tasks are conducted and add safety and add efficiency. So I truly came from the data perspective, and I recognize that drones are going to be this amazing new thing, and they're going to proliferate through a multitude of different industries. And I wanted to be at the forefront of that institutional change. And that's how I arrived at the drone. You know, really for me, it's, they're cool. They are very cool. I mean, there's no denying that they're amazing pieces of technology, but for me, it's about what they can do and what that sensor in the sky at a different perspective can do. And that's the beauty of these systems.
So that's an interesting thing, because now you're at Brink, and let's get to talk a little bit about Brink and what they do, because it's different than what you really started with in terms of data, right? So if the listeners have never heard about Brink, how would you describe the company and what you guys do?
We are an American drone manufacturer, but today we manufacture the Lemur S, which is a tactical drone. It is a drone for clearing structures, for going inside houses, finding people, and rendering that structure safe. It is a drone that is specifically designed for flying at indoor environments, and it has been designed specifically for the niche application of flying indoors and finding individuals for first responders. We make a new class of drones. We call them first responder drones. And yes, public safety has been an industry that's been adopting drone technology at a very heavy rate over the last few years. I mean, clearly at Pix4D, I did a lot of collision reconstruction and other, you know, fire work with the data side for drones. But the difference here is that now we're using that technology, and it's niche built for a specific application of going indoors. And that actually is one of the most dangerous things that a first responder can do, is to enter the unknown in a confined space. And our drone is designed for that. GPS denied environments, confined space flying, specifically for first responders to go indoors.
And so before we start talking more about the Lemur S, because that sounds like a super interesting drone, and I definitely want to learn more about that one, Let's back up a little bit and talk about how Brink Drones got started. Because on the website, I read something that Blake Resnick, the CEO, I think is still fairly young, which is quite amazing to have achieved all this, but that he got inspired to start Brink after the mass shooting in Las Vegas in 2017. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Blake has an amazing story. I'm actually sitting at his desk in his chair right now because our company has exploded with growth so heavily over the last 10 months that there's no more parking spaces. We've opened the second office in Seattle, which I'm moving to next week. Whenever I have to do something quiet, like a podcast or et cetera, we shuffle around offices because we have experienced explosive growth, and Blake is at the helm of that. So Blake Resnick is 21 years old today. He was the youngest ever accepted to Northwestern Engineering College at the age of 14, his father's alma mater. He attended for, I think, a semester, and then he basically didn't want to do that anymore. He cold called McLaren in the UK, and then he went over there as an intern at 15. At 16, he was an intern at Tesla, working with battery technology. And then at 17, he worked for DGI directly for Arnaud, who's now at Auterion. Blake was his intern, so directly for the VP of R&D at DGI USA in Palo Alto. And from that standpoint forward, he decided that he wanted to proliferate his own drone company. So he returned to Las Vegas, to his home, his family home, and he started building drones. And he built an amazing drone that is not in production today at Brink. It's an R&D, and it will be our next product, which I will not talk about, but just know that big things are coming. And then October 1 happened. And he pivoted. October 1 is the largest mass shooting in United States history. It's an absolutely terrible event. There was a concert ground, and from an elevated position in a hotel, the Mandalay Bay, a shooter had a weapon, and they were shooting down at the folks that were, you know, just there to enjoy themselves and listen to music. And it resulted in a lot of deaths and a lot of injuries. Really terrible event. Blake, family and friends are at that event. He's inspired by that event. The city was moved here in Las Vegas by that tragic event. It's a really terrible thing that happens. I don't think it should happen. Obviously, everyone doesn't think these mass shootings should happen, but they're awful. And Blake cold called Las Vegas SWAT at 17 or 18 years old, and he said, "Hey, I want to build you a robot that could reduce the time of that incident, because there was a hallway from the elevator bay to where this horrific human's room was," mm-hmm. "where he was conducting the shooting, that SWAT operators simply had to run with no cover. But he wanted to produce a system that would have done that, hallway much faster and in a safe environment, and provide a piece of technology, a flying robot that could reduce the time of these incidents." And obviously Las Vegas SWAT, the lieutenant goes, "Okay, yeah, this is a kid. What's he going to do for us?" Blake is very persistent. He continues to cold call until they allow him to go on call-outs, which are SWAT operations. Blake attends 20-something call-outs, sitting in the Bearcat, which is the very large armored vehicle that they put in front of the target structure or the house that they're entering or the building they're entering. And every aspect of our drone was R&D'd live on a call-out. And then from there, he got some seed funding, and then he's also now raised some more funding, a Series A. We have a decent amount of money. And with that, he's gone ahead and hired, Brett Kanda from FLIR was the first employee. He's our VP sales and marketing. Brett called me. I was at Pix4D, and it got me to leave Pix4D to join this startup in Las Vegas. And then from there, we've continued to hire some incredible top tier talent, fill the engineering roster, fill the training roster. And now we are at some 60 employees in about a 10-month, 11-month time frame. We've just solidified a lease up in Seattle, Washington, where I'm actually moving next week to Seattle, and we'll be hiring a cadre of engineers there. And so for all of those in the drone industry or those that with engineering disciplines that we're interested in, we have a lot of jobs posted on our website right now. And we desire to scale and have the top customer service and be the best brand that's an American drone company. And we also have a strong tenant of domestic manufacturing. So the United States over the last many years has lost its manufacturing, high-end manufacturing prowess, and with what the government wants in the United States and a call for U.S.-made products, we would like to do that as well. And so actually here in our Las Vegas factory, we're domestically manufacturing all aspects on our system in-house.
So I'm glad you're starting to talk about the aircraft. That's where I wanted to kind of pivot to next. I've seen you guys fly in Texas over the summer, and then I saw you guys again in Vegas flying. This is a different type of flying. This is not something that we see a lot in the industry. This is an FPV drone that is flown from a completely different perspective. Can you talk about this and the reason why the founder wanted to use this kind of technology as opposed to the traditional GPS easy to fly drone? This is not necessarily an easy to fly drone. That's where you guys provide training, and we'll get to that
It
training part as well.
is definitely harder to fly than a DJI system, than a GPS system. Absolutely. But with some training and some practice, it's not that hard to fly at all. And we also have LiDAR-based pilot assistance on the base of the system that makes it a lot easier to fly as well. So let's talk about this drone and why it's doing so well. Why our company is doing so well in the market, and we're making genuine sales, and we're putting these drones in the hands of end users, and we're hearing successful stories back. It's because I think a lot of times in the engineering discipline, and I think all of us get this, you know, I used to live in San Francisco, and we get encapsulated by, you know, these fancy terms, you know, machine learning and HD video and high resolution sensors. Well, a lot of the times you don't need that. What you need to do is understand the end problem and build a piece of technology that solves the end problem. And that's what Blake has done. He's taken technology that already existed and combined it with some new stuff from the drone world to produce a drone that flies indoors in GPS denied environments and has an analog signal penetration instead of digital for both the command and control, as well as the video coming back to the ground controller, which allows you to fly through very dense material in old churches and old schools where there's a lot of, you know, lead pipes and concrete walls and brick walls, etc. So the idea is solve the problem at hand. Don't just produce something with a lot of keywords in it. And that's exactly what Brink Drones has done. And so now what we have here is the Lemur S. This is a 100% domestically manufactured system. It's produced of carbon fiber. Everything is 3D printed here in the office. The internals are all are almost all domestically manufactured electronics and PCBs on top. So let's start with let's do just walk around the drone, right? Let's talk about it. Drones are flying cameras, so we'll start off with the camera system. So the camera system, you can see, has three lenses. In the center is a 1080p RGB wide-angle zoom camera. So we call it tactical flight. There's no gimbal because all of us know that when we crash a drone, that gimbal firmware gets messed up, and then you're not able to fly faster, and you know, you have to fix it. Well, it's a delicate piece of equipment. This thing is very, very tough. I can slam into walls. I can throw it off roofs. You can hit it. You can kick it in the air, and it's still very, very stable. So for tactical flight, the idea that this drone is designed to go indoors and fly through a house and clear a structure. Clear a structure, make sure that everything is safe. You know, the person that you're looking for in a search and rescue situation, or the person that the police department is delivering a warrant to, is found. And in a peaceful way, right? We have a strong commitment as a company, and I'm going to repeat this multiple times through the podcast. We have a small, strong commitment as a company to never weaponize a system. Everything we do is in the line of de-escalation to provide a piece of technology that takes an existing methodology and innovates on it, right? My father was a special forces operator for the vast majority of his time as a young man, even to mid-age. And he always said, going into a house is the most dangerous thing we do, going into an unknown. Well, SWAT teams today, they go into these unknowns and they're all men with guns. Why don't we replace that with a non-weaponized, communication-oriented system? This way, it keeps not only operators, SWAT operators, safe, but also it keeps the suspect safe, and it keeps the innocent bystanders safe. And keeping everybody safe is the most important thing. Reduction of weaponized systems, increase of communication systems. So back to the drone, sorry. So the drone is manufactured in-house in the United States, and it's an analog video signal. So 915 megahertz for the command and control, which is through this radio on the base of the system. Then on top of the system, you have a metal piece that is a bikini top that you can open to do access all of the electronics and access the SIM card slot. But also it doubles as a VTX antenna, so a video transmission device antenna, as well as a heat sink for the system. Back to the camera. So on the camera, it's a fixed gimbal RGB, you know, a very clear camera system. And on the left and the right is why the drone is called the Lemur. because in a pitch black environment, you turn these on the controller. These are infrared diodes, 840 nanometers, that allow us to see in a pitch black environment. Just like tactical goggles, these are, you can see very clearly up to 20 feet in front of you in pitch black environment. And so they're infrared diodes in a completely black room. When you're looking at this drone and you switch on the IR, it looks like two little red eyes. So hence the lemur. On the base of the system where I'm actually holding the drone is a speaker. This is the only drone with two-way communication. So we put a SIM card in the drone and you just call it like a cell phone. That allows negotiators to talk to people. At Brink, we have a strong a tenet of we want to produce devices for communication so you can talk to people. The FBI says that if you can produce communication with a suspect in a barricaded situation within the first couple minutes of that incident, you have the above a 90 percentile chance of a peaceful outcome. Everything we want to do is for a peaceful outcome. Now, onto the rest of the drone. On top of it is an antenna that comes back. On the back of the drone is actually a physical screw that you use when you put the battery in. So this is a battery, lithium ion chemistry, not a lipo. That means that you get 500 charge cycles. It handles much better with cold and hot. And it lasts 31 minutes in the air. And if the motors are not running, you can perch this drone or sit it in a house and get video and voice for up to 10 hours. So now you plug in the system and it'll just, this is a dummy drone, so that's why it's not turning on. But the battery's plugged in, and then you take a physical screw and you screw it in. And the reason for this is you can slam this thing into a concrete wall and the battery won't pop out, right? So this is the fastest out of the box into the air drone system on the market. Within 30 seconds, you should have it out of the box, plugged in, turn the dial, the LiDARs activate, you hear two tones, and then the thing takes off. It's a one-to-one encrypted video and transmission between the drone system and the hand controller. The hand controller is pretty cool. It's 100% carbon fiber. We make it in the United States. We make it in-house. There's this really cool green button that you turn on, the green button, and then on the screen itself that's built in, you can see all of the analog, right? You got that salt and pepper look. This is not a digital system. This is a very advanced drone with a proven analog signal penetration capability. What's cool about the controller is you can take the gimbals and you can drop them like this so that if this is carabinered onto an operator's vest or onto their backpack or something, these won't get snagged. You just rip them back up and you get good to go. And since you're drone guys, you know how with the DJI system, you take these two and you put them in to start the drone? What we do at Brink is we have these two cool buttons on the back, and you hit both of the buttons together and the drone will arm. So I think that's really cool from a drone perspective.
So before this show started today, you showed me a video, Angus, about I think a lemur drone flying through what seemed to be a small playground, and then you dropped the drone, it slipped down a slide. And then before it came to the end of the slide, you were able to fly off and take off. Tell me a little bit about how this drone is designed so that it can actually recover from crashes or recover when it's flipped upside down, because that video was pretty amazing already.
It is really cool to show videos that, like, a SWAT operator is never going to do that, right? I mean, you can show this video. It's super cool. And we can do things with this drone that you can't do with other drones because it's a very stable system, very stable in the air. And it's able to handle very tight maneuvers, and it's designed to just keep going. So you can fly it through very tight environments. Any hole that's big enough for this drone to get through, it will get through. And the reason for that is the software on the drone, the Brink software on the drone, is really designed for stability on bidirectional forces, which means that the drone can be pushed from the left and the right at the same time, and it will hold steady in the air. And by some proprietary information in the system and the way it flies. But the reason that we do that is when a lot of times this is designed as an indoor drone, right? So when you're flying through a hallway or you're flying in the interior of a structure, the prop wash from the motors on the left and the right-hand side will cause air turbulence underneath the drone. And in a tight hallway, a lot of drones would be unstable. Like they would go like this, right? Ours, perfectly flat through that hallway. And that's something that comes from the secret sauce and the engineering from Blake's mind in the stability of the system, if that answers that question. Another thing that helps it with stability is we use LiDAR-based pilot assistance. So on the base of the drone is a one-point LiDAR or time-of-flight sensor that works up to 40 meters. And what that sensor does is it allows it to recognize exactly the altitude above the ground and maintain that altitude. So for example, if you're going up a hill or you're going down a hill, which there's no hills inside houses usually, so what's a hill in a house? It's a staircase. Okay. If you're going up a staircase or down a staircase, the drone will recognize the change in incline or the slope change with the LiDAR system and then naturally go up and down, which allows it much easier navigation indoors. The other thing that's really cool about it indoors is, and Haya, please stop me if I'm not answering your question appropriately, is when you put this thing up against a wall, you can force it into the wall and induction will not suck it up into the wall. Or you can put it up against the ceiling and suck it up into the ceiling, and then it's very easy. You just put the stick down and it comes right off the ceiling. A lot of other systems on the market don't do that. If they touch a wall or they get to a ceiling, they'll get stuck to it, and then it's sort of awkward to get it off. You have to turn the drone off and let it crash, etc. With our system, you don't have to worry about that. It's been designed to not handle more than a 30-degree forward or side or left movement change. And then also, it's designed specifically to not have it sucked up into ceilings, etc. So it is an incredibly stable system indoors.
That's awesome. I mean, Greg and I will alternate questions roughly. Quick one before I let you now go on this. What are those two silver or metal colored pins on the drone? I see four of them, two up, two down. Yes,
those guys. These are standoffs. So they're essentially pieces of metal that protect the system. So if I'm flying forward and I bang into a door to open it, or I'm looking up into a window and I put the drone up against it, it'll have stability and it'll protect the camera lens as well. And that's the biggest idea here, is that you're increasing strength in the ability of the drone to push things. And then also in turtle mode, and I know I sent you a video of the drone doing turtle mode, Haya, but when the drone's in turtle mode, which turtle mode means to reverse the motors and flip the drone over, so if it lands on its back like this, or if it lands against a wall like this, etc., you just hit a switch on the controller, turn it into turtle mode, and the drone will turn over like that.
Awesome.
I want to talk about the analog signal because we see more and more drones going into the digital world. What's the limitation for you guys to move into the digital world? Or is there any, or is that something that we can see on the next models in the future or expect in the same next models?
Digital is amazing for outdoors. It's not for indoors. It is a very conscious decision to use analog. And the reason for that is this is a niche built for going indoors and flying in GPS-denied environments. Now, if you're flying in an old building, an old church, or an old school, or you have multiple layers of concrete, sometimes in those old buildings during renovations, they would put a metal mesh piece next to the brick and then the drywall on the exterior of it. When we're looking at a wall construction like that and we're looking at flying from outdoors to indoors, you have an amazing amount of material to penetrate through. And so by using long wave 915 megahertz as a command and control, as well as an analog either 2.4 or 5.8 gigahertz on the video transmission that returns to the system from the drone itself, we're able to maintain great authority on the system indoors. So it's a very conscious decision to use analog because the goal of the system and what makes it beautiful and makes clients want it is that it works. I don't care how pretty my video feed is. I'm not making a movie, right? I'm trying to save somebody's life, or I'm trying to find somebody inside of a building with, you know, in a fire situation where it's smoke filled. If the goal is to find things indoors, you have to be able to proliferate a signal through dense material. And that's why it utilizes analog.
And I'm guessing the latency also has something to play in here. The digital signal, the digital signal tend to have a little bit more latency than the analog signal. So that's important when this is your sole way of flying the aircraft.
Absolutely. I mean, many times with, you know, today in public safety operations, a lot of guys are taking Mavic Minis, especially the two with the stronger Oculus technology, and they're throwing prop guards on it and they're going indoors, right? Well, you can't turn off the base obstacle sensors. And so when you go indoors, sometimes going through a window that's open can be very difficult because they have to line it up and then slam it through. Otherwise, sometimes if they don't do it fast enough, it'll go into the window and it'll pop up into the ceiling. Our drone will never do that. It'll just never do that. The other thing is with the Mavic Mini, the heat sinks on the base of the drone. So they set it down on a couch or they set it down on a carpet or something, and then the drone overheats and turns off. I get that story all the time. Our drone will never do that. This is niche built for that indoor application. Everything on the drone is designed specifically for that. So there's a lot of comparisons to existing systems and methodologies people are doing indoors and what our system is able to achieve.
So the Lemur S can be outfitted with LiDAR. For people or for listeners on a show who aren't familiar with LiDAR, can you explain a bit what LiDAR is all about and why it's beneficial for your use case over GPS?
Sure. So a lot of outdoor drones, right? Like, let's talk about what drones were really doing, right? Drones were flying cell phones. They take GPSs and they take IMUs and like DJI systems, Autel systems. They go outdoors and they use the GPS to provide a position hold on the system. And then they use an IMU to calibrate the forward movement and the rear movement, right? I believe that's technically correct. I'm sure there's an engineer out there that says it's a much more complicated answer, but that's a simple way to understand it. So with the GPS outdoors, well, there's no GPS indoors. So if you're making an indoor system, you can't do that. So instead, what we do is we have a LiDAR system, so a laser. So the laser is shot out of the sensor, and then when the laser returns to the sensor, the computer calculates exactly how much time it was before the beam was out and back. And then, of course, we know that it's a standard, you know, linear relationship of the laser hitting a wall and coming back. So by that time, that very precise time, we know exactly how far away the object is. And this is how the drone can have altitude hold. So instead of like a fully fully manual FPV racing drone where the pilots have to control everything like a helicopter, here the thing has some autonomy and it's keeping itself stable in the air. And because it doesn't have to bother about, you know, GPS to keep it stable, but rather it's the flight software inside combined with the LiDAR keeping it stable indoors, you're able to achieve that ability to fly through hallways and up and down staircases and bang open closet doors and look inside. The other thing that really allows it to be really designed for the indoor use is the fact that the motors are calibrated to not suck into things, which also is part of the lithium ion chemistry. It's all conjunction of it. And then the analog signal penetration and the fact that it's really, really tough. That really is a big thing. I mean, you know, I'm perfectly happy to throw the drone against a wall or crash it. We call it a rigidity test. So if we do a demo for you, which we're happy to do demos all over the country, we'll go anywhere in the world to do a demo on the system. I mean, we've done over 100 something demos in the last few months. I just have come back from 3 weeks on the road. We do it a rigidity test. So we just slam it into the wall as hard as we can. It's really fun.
Well, there's something else that you slam into, which is windows, and the drone comes with a special tool at the front. Can you talk about this? That was the first thing when I saw this drone flying. That was the one thing that really caught my attention, was the window breaking.
On the base of the drone, we have a Picatinny rail, right? All tactical operators know exactly how that works. It's just a rail system, and the accessory slides onto it. Ours has integrated power. So we take this tungsten carbide blade, which is a tungsten carbide Ninja Star, and it slides and gets power from the accessories bay on that Picatinny rail, and it spins on the front of the system. And then you just go up to a window and you tap it, and that window will shatter. And now a lot of times people will say, that's scary. And I agree, this is scary. The reason that our drone has a glass breaker is because SWAT teams today, to enter a building, you know, in a safe manner, to break a window, they will explosively breach that window, which obviously you're putting explosives on a window, guys. That's not super safe. The second thing is they'll shoot that window out with like a 40 cal round, which is also not very safe because you don't know who's on the other side of that window. This is a much safer alternative. It goes up, it taps the glass, and it shatters and comes down. If you have an overturned bus and you have to break a window to get people out of that bus, here's a tool to do it. If you have a fire in a condo building and you want to ventilate a top floor to get that smoke out, you just fly this up to the top of the window, tap the glass, it'll shatter and it'll come off. We can do automotive glass. Tint is a little difficult. If there's tint on the window, typically you have to use the glass breaker to break the tint and then smash the drone into the window till it comes off. And then automotive glass is very simple. I sent you the video of that. If you want to edit it into the podcast, it'd be super cool to show people that. Automotive glass is not an issue. And double pane residential glass is not an issue. Triple pane, you need to be a pretty good pilot because you got to tap a lot of you know, holes into it and then it'll break. But it has a glass breaker because that is something that folks have to do all the time. I mean, firefighters many times will arrive on scene at a car accident and they carry a special tool to smash that window out. You have to break through glass as part of the operation.
Is the Lemur S drone, is that drone currently being sold? And if so, where is it currently being used?
Yeah, the Lemur S is absolutely in production and it's being delivered to clients. Las Vegas Metropolitan SWAT team has 250 plus live missions on the system. Atlanta SWAT is using the system. We have a lot of rural counties that are using the system because our drone has communication in it, right? That cell phone to talk to people. Public safety entities will use it to fly into buildings that are farther away or up onto cliffs where a hiker may be to communicate with that person. That's absolutely something. We have, you know, quite a few counties in Florida, Miami, Aventura, et cetera, that are using the SIM system. Nampa, Idaho has some. Kansas City is a friend of ours as well. There's some systems in Texas, and they're getting more popular. You know, for a 10-month-old company, we already have, you know, a decent client list, and we have some 100 plus, maybe close to 150, 200 systems in the market.
Oh, wow. That's impressive. So these systems, they are mostly 3D printed. You have some electronics coming in for overseas. You manufacture them right here in the United States. How much are they roughly?
$9,000 for a kit. And a kit comes with the drone, the 100% domestically made hand controller. That's really cool. This feels amazing in your hands. Two batteries, spare parts, spare tools, and a Pelican case.
Let's talk about the spares, actually, because the one thing that I remember from your demo was the fact that you can actually kind of fix this thing. Obviously, it's designed to take a beat up, but it will break eventually. And then what are the parts that you see breaking the most in operation at the moment? And how quickly can they do this on the field, you know, to get it back up in the air?
You get spare propellers, although these don't, because they're not carbon fiber propellers. They're the what's it called? The plastic material. They're plastic, so they don't break. They're pretty robust propellers, actually. Everything outside of the core of the drone can be field repaired. So the things that break the most on really, really hard impacts, sometimes this IR lens will pop off. So there's glue, and you just glue it back on. If you really kick it hard when it's in the air, occasionally this standoff will come off. And then you just screw it back on, and we send those in the drone completely. Other than those two things, it doesn't really break because these prop propellers are pretty soft, so you can squeeze them, right? And because they have a lot of give and a lot of squeeze, when it bangs into things, it doesn't break.
So how hard would it be, let's say, for a Part 107 pilot who works for a police department or SWAT team and now they start working with you guys and he's going to learn how to fly a Brink drone? Like, how much time would it take for, let's say, an average pilot like that to get
As a manufacturer, we require a three-day training on the system. It's a very regimented three-day training. It's actually an incredibly intense three-day training. Our director of training is the former assistant team leader of Las Vegas SWAT. He's been a senior instructor for General Dynamics for many years. Our curriculums are very well done. There's many people in the drone industry that have gone through our training that are like, whoa, that's a good training. Like Derek Ward from Enterprise UAS, LAFD drone pilot. He's been doing a lot of drone trainings for years. He came through our class. He goes, whoa, that's intense. And he said that on the internet too. So we have guys come through our class and say it's the best training they've ever gone through. And it's very regimented. And because of that, you go through that three-day training, you're comfortable to fly the drone through a structure afterwards. We put them on flight simulators. Then we take them through the environment because a lot of pilots are used to flying outdoors. They're not necessarily used to flying indoors. So you have to learn how to take very nice, smooth 90-degree corners to go around a window or go around a hallway, how to scale and descale through the staircases, how to bang into a wall and be comfortable to put the drone up against a wall and hit the sticks forward and go through that structure, how to land it onto tight surfaces like the top of a dresser or a kitchen cabinet or the microwave, and also how to be wary of your environment to avoid trash bags. Trash bags are the kryptonite to an indoor drone. If it gets sucks up into the motors, you're done. It's going to be hard to get that one out. So you do have to be conscious of that as well.
I want to talk about the Blue UAS. I don't know why I can't talk today. I want to talk about the Blue UAS. And you guys are manufactured in the US. Are you in the process of getting approved to be one of the Blue UAS manufacturer?
So yes and no. So Blue SUAS 2.0, which is a program run by the DIU, the Defense Innovation Unit, is essentially a cohort of technology for the Department of Defense that allows, basically they have created a list of drones that are what everything that DIU does is called NDAA compliant, National Defense Authorization Act compliant, which basically means that absolutely none of the components in the system come from countries like Russia, China, Iran, or North Korea. For Blue SUAS, we're only a 10-month-old company, guys, right? So these programs have been going on for a little bit of time. So to get into them and then get through them, is it just takes time, right? So we did participate in Blue SUAS 2.0. Yesterday, they announced the 11 companies that went through the process. There is one component in our technology that is produced in China, an electronic chip. And so because of that one chip component, we did not get reach NDAA compliance today. Even though the drone does not have a GPS, it has no cloud connectivity, it has no internet connection, and it's encrypted on an analog, so it's technically cyber secure. Because of the lack of compliance on one particular legal definition, we did not achieve NDAA compliance. And this is something that, as a company, we're innovating very, very fast. And part of the reason we have opened this engineering office in Seattle that we're filling with engineers actively today, we will achieve that within the next coming months.
But if you look at the other Blue SUAS manufacturers, I mean, I don't think any of their drones are entirely manufactured and assembled here in the United States, are they? I mean, they are part of the program.
They're not. But yeah. Basically, the point is that they don't have any Chinese components in them. The government today, some will even say we're in a cold war with China. This is things like I'm told. Okay, all I'm saying is things I am told. Mm-hmm. And they will say that, you know, and we all know in the drone industry, there's a heavy villainization of DJI and Autel and other drone manufacturers. I mean, we're all aware of this, right? Whether it's warranted or not warranted, who knows? But a lot of people in the DoD world will say it absolutely is warranted. The data is going back to China. We mustn't fly over our critical infrastructure or under federal installments with these drone systems. And it's a beautiful place for Brink to be in. Because we're manufacturing everything here domestically. It's also a tough place where there are hundreds and hundreds of agencies and industrial companies that are relying now on DJI systems, you know, being the biggest and the best drone company in the world today, that are no longer allowed to fly those systems. And it produces turmoil in the industry where companies like Brink can come in and produce a niche-based system and then do very well and strive to bring manufacturing to the United States and strive to achieve that here domestically. What we've achieved in 10 months is remarkable. It absolutely is remarkable, but it's 10 months. There's a lot of runway to go.
Yeah. It sounds like you guys might actually be the first real Blue SUAS company if you're able to get that one little piece, that chip that you were talking about, not made in China. As far as I know, I think all the other Blue SUAS still contain parts that are made in China, but they are exemptions or waivers for that, apparently.
Yes, absolutely. I think a bigger company with more lawyers can achieve a lot. We will get there.
Yep. Speaking of regulation, I want to talk about remote ID because your drone, in theory, is an indoor drone. I'm sure at one point you take off from outside and then you go inside and then the FAA regulation kind of changes, right? The FAA doesn't control what goes on inside. But from a manufacturer standpoint, this is not something we talk a lot about because the FAA mandated that by September of 2022, manufacturers have to comply with remote ID. For you, it's got to be kind of interesting because this is remote ID is going to be a technology you use for a split second and then you go inside and then it's no longer required. How are you guys working on this plan?
If the FAA mandates something and the drone is used outside, it must be followed. That's very simple. And as a manufacturer, we must abide by that, you know, and we must make sure that there are safeguards in place so that our end client is protected and our end client is compliant with the laws of the United States. It's a very simple answer. Today, And so basically, yes, it's being worked on. This is a terrestrial robot mount. It comes in our accessories box. Basically, the drone just sits in this mount, and they put it on a terrestrial robot or the boom of a Bearcat. And so tactical operators can get this drone under the roofline of the structure on a mount being carried on some other robot, and then they are flying 100% indoors once they are under the roofline of the structure. So that is one way to avoid the remote ID laws. Now, that's not the case with everything, right? I mean, I've sent you videos of the drone flying, and I'm sure we'll show one here where we are starting off outdoors and going indoors because that's the premise of the system. So if that is the case, then the drone must evolve to follow remote ID.
Yeah. Do you have some, since so many drones are already out there in the field and being used, do you have some cool stories about how you know that this drone was used, perhaps to help people, help save somebody's life or some other awesome stories?
Yeah, absolutely. So there was a police department that was delivering a warrant on a suspect that had a known dangerous criminal history, multiple attempted murder charges, assault against police officers, etc. And this individual had hurt one of their friends in a violent manner. That friend had run out of the home bloody, and they called the police to, you know, respond to that incident. The SWAT team, because they knew of the individual being dangerous, had arrived on scene. That person barricaded themselves in the house, which means they stay in the house and they say they're not coming out and you have to come and get me, which is a terribly dangerous situation. You know, me as a human being, my brain just could never work like that. You know, I was taught to listen as a child. And so, you know, if there's, you know, a SWAT team of guys outside, I'm just going to come out with my hands up, you know, and hopefully I never do something wrong where that ever happens to me. But sometimes in society, there are sad stories. And that's something I learned more and more dealing with public safety and law enforcement. And so they send the drone inside the house to clear the first floor and then to fly up the stairs to the second floor to identify the location of the person and talk to him through the drone to say that obviously we're outdoors and to negotiate on what he would like so that a peaceful outcome can be attained. The individual has a rifle and the individual locks themselves in a closet and starts to shoot through the closet door at the drone, the noise coming up the stairs. We're pretty confident that that individual thought it was the SWAT team coming in the house. That means humans coming in the house, and he was shooting at human beings. I would much, much rather that our drone is shot at than a human being is shot at, because that is where terrible situations that then result in, you know, unhappy, you know, community members, and unhappy family members, and obviously an unhappy SWAT team occurs, right? The whole point is let's produce technology that makes things safer for everybody. So I'd much rather have my drone shot at than to have a human being shot at and result in a more unfortunate situation than the situation already occurring. I hope that's an appropriate answer.
Yeah, I think that's a great example of good drone use. We see a lot of them, you know, every single day from public safety specifically, where, you know, drones save lives. I want to kind of loop back a little bit with remote ID, because one of the big critique that I've been making and a lot of other people in the industry is that the location of the pilot is going to be disclosed with the remote ID module, and that includes law enforcement. How do you see this affecting what your clients are doing using drones, you know, having somebody know that there is a drone there looking at them, or knowing that the drone is even there looking at them when it's a mission critical?
In some ways, drones coming and looking at you is inherently scary. I think we're all fully aware of that. And as technology leaders in the industry, we should be very open about that as well. If that's the case, then that's the case, right? I think this is something that the experts in lawmaking and situational awareness should be providing. I think, you know, my domain expertise is truly application and technology and proliferation of that technology. I've always been one to stay a little to the side and not a mainline commentator on FAA regulations, because that's not my domain of expertise. I will say that at Brink Drones, we have some folks, including Brett Canda, who was at the FAA before his job at FLIR, you know, running the Nevada, or helping to run the Nevada test site for UAS integration, as well as some other folks that have worked with very large UAS programs that would be better suited to answer that question. I doubt that's what you wanted to hear, Greg. I apologize. But the other thing to note is, let's look at BVLOS, right? So beyond visual line of sight today. It's very rare to get a BVLOS waiver, right? But when it comes to tactical applications for houses, there is a tactical BVLOS waiver that Drone Responders has helped proliferate with the relationship with Mike O'Shea with the FAA. I mean, that's a situation where, in the essence of public safety, you're allowed to fly the drone around the house or over a mountain in an application, right? So they apply for that waiver, they have it, they have the right regulation, they have the training, they get it done. I am sure that when Remote ID comes out and a system like ours is being proliferated for indoor applications and SWAT teams, there will be waivers and there will be appropriate legislation around it. There just has to be. And as a brand, Brink should support the FAA in any way possible and support the community in any way possible.
Yep. And we work with Drone Responders a lot, so this is something great that they've done. You're right, with Mike O'Shea and Charles Werner working together and getting this done. And I appreciate that you realize that this may not be your area of expertise and that there are better people to talk about it. So thank you for that.
Of course. The one thing I hate is when you comment on things that you're not 100% confident on or that you're not educated on. That's why the world is made up of millions of people and not just a few. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Angad, we're coming up to the hour here. We're going to move on to our last question for this interview. What is your favorite drone to fly? And it doesn't necessarily have to be a Brink drone, but just your favorite all-time drone.
It's a trick question.
Well, as the director of business development, I actually really like flying the Lemur S in LiDAR mode. I think it's incredibly fun to fly through a house or to fly through the woods or fly through the trees. This is what the Lemur S can do. And I'm not even joking around that, like, oh, you know, it's not my favorite drone to fly. But, like, can you do this with an Inspire 1? No. And the Inspire 1 used to be my favorite drone to fly. I loved flying the Inspire 1. I thought it was awesome. I also really like the Autel Evo 2 Pro. I think it's a fantastic drone. I helped calibrate a lot of the sensors for that drone to work in PIX4D. Here, we'll go for – oh, so here, let's do it here. So now the drone's going into this – kitchen area, and on the switch we've put on night vision, so now you're in IR and in a very, very dark room you can see very clearly, and then you can, you know, fly it along the floor and we can look underneath there and we can keep moving forward. And for me, having been in the drone industry for a long time and also coming from a mapping world where I'm used to drawing grids on a tablet and then, you know, having the drone automated flight and automated data capture, if I'm actually flying, I've liked flying the Lemur S with our inbuilt controller, so I don't have to wear FPV goggles, and I think that is really, really fun. And that's not even me just, you know, being a salesman and saying, oh, I like my own drone. I genuinely believe it's an incredible piece of technology, and I do really enjoy flying it.
Awesome. It's pretty phenomenal what you guys can do with the Lemur S.
See here, our pilot in this instance flew it into that metal industrial looking tower and then on purpose has just gone ahead and crashed it. And now we'll see them, he's probably just, pop it back from turtle mode, and then he's going to take off and continue flying through the structure here in a night vision based environment. And then that's just super cool. You know, you can't really do that with other systems. So for me, that is exciting. Look, we're going in a completely pitch black environment. I will say flying in night vision is incredibly cool. I feel like I'm from the future when I do that. It is really exciting. So here, see, the night vision goes on. You can see very clearly what's happening inside. And then we can continue forward, and it turns off. So that one for me is super exciting. And I to be really honest, I like flying the Lemur S, the drone.
No, I was going to say, it's a pretty phenomenal story. I mean, not just a story about the company itself being so young and so innovative, but also the Lemur S is a drone that has some very unique and awesome features. So I want to thank you for coming onto our show. I know that was very last moment when we set this up and you were available. You showed us an awesome product and some cool video footage. There's a lot more to talk about, but we have about an hour for this show. So Angad, thank you very much for being here. For all the people that are watching this show on YouTube or are listening to the podcast, please like, please subscribe, and please share with your friends. The more people follow us, the more we'll have to basically make the show better and bigger as we go forward. That's it for today. A new episode every Tuesday, so stay tuned.